is Rose Osborne, cap number 132. I'm 36 and I am a data analyst.
My name is Franziska Schöni. What was the next?
Your age?
My age is 41. I work in a social office from a community. Adventure.
Nikki Shaw, I am 36 years old. My day job is a combination of part-time work in a porcelain and natural stone showroom, and then I also do freelance work as a graphic designer and working for Dot Watcher.
Emily Bae Chung, I am 33. I am from San Francisco, California, USA, and for work I do a combination of art and photography and software engineering, so a creative side and a technical side.
I'm Igu, I'm 38, I use they, them pronouns, I'm non-binary. My day job is related to technology and LGBTQI rights, like digital rights for LGBTQI people. It's kind of hard to explain in one word for my experience. I think profound.
So I'm Katie Moss, I'm 34. I work as a civil servant in our energy and climate change department. My electrolyte was called Punchy, and I think that probably sums up my week. It was definitely Punchy.
Karen Winfield, cap number 85. I am going to be 56 next month. I am a manager who works for a water company.
Can you tell me your name, your age, your day job, and one word to describe your experience?
Rosa Tercaula, 33.
Your day job?
Oh, artist.
Yeah.
Burp.
Yeah.
That's
very good. Nelly Grotefend, cap number 30. I'm 39 and I'm a chiropractor and acupuncturist.
I'm Patricia. I'm 55 years old and I'm normally a senior sales manager for organizing convention sales and weddings and stuff like that. And the race was just without words. Amazing. Crazy.
Welcome to the Lost.101 podcast, supported by our race partners, Albion and Ride with GPS. You join us on day 6 at the finish line in Cordoba, where riders are coming in thick and fast in a hurry to make the finishers party and GC cutoff time. Over the last week and nearly 1,300 kilometres, 144 Flinter cyclists have braved the wild weather, long steep climbs and long, long days and nights of the Lost.101. In the process, forging new community, connections and most importantly, competition. We've seen extraordinary rides, both from our front runners, but also from those further back in the field, many of whom have been taking part in their first ever ultra. Our race reporters Aflin and Sophie, as well as race director Hannah, were at the finish line to speak to riders as they came in and the party got started. Here's Nikki Shaw, cap 92, who spoke to us about their impressively strong ride and also about how valuable the experience had been, despite eventually receiving a DQ for routing on an illegal road.
Yeah, it was quite overwhelming, just the temperatures, to be honest. I think a lot of people were caught out with the cold temperatures in northern Spain, myself included, and suffering from lack of sleep was my biggest challenge. So dealing with a lot of dozes on the road, having to stop and nap a lot when I didn't really want to. So what I did notice comparing my race with some of the other top 10 finishers was that a lot of them stayed in accommodation just to get a better quality rest, whereas I think I was one of the only people who just slept outside every night. So my quality of rest was so poor. It just meant that it wasn't conducive just to have that sustainable pace, so I was playing constant catch up.
Do you think you'd do it again?
Definitely, with no DQ this time.
Talk about that.
Yeah.
yeah, how does it feel to come in and then have that experience?
I mean, at the time, it was a surprise and it was a shock because I wasn't expecting to have that dropped on me right when I'd finished the race. No. So yeah, it's quite a tough pill to swallow at that moment in time. But then the flip side is the rules are there for a reason, so, and I acknowledge that. So it's not like I have a bitterness towards it. So I'm okay with it.
No bitterness, but it's obviously a hard, it's just a tricky thing to come and experience.
Yeah. And I think I can separate the two, so the fact that I was DQ'd doesn't have anything to do with my actual ride, like my personal experience that I had out there. It doesn't affect that. So, and I can be proud still of the ride that I did.
CAP 24, Igu Schwab Hoyer, scratched from the race, but made their way to the finishers' party and spoke to Aflin about making peace with that scratch and just how important it felt for Flinter riders like themselves to have dedicated races to join.
We spoke on top of Toro, you said you were thinking of scratching, but yeah, then I saw that you carried on for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So what? How did that decision come about?
I think if you remember, I said, okay, I would drop and I would eat, and it was so frustrating because the vegetarian restaurant was not vegetarian at all and was super hard to eat. And there I started checking the map and everything, and I saw, okay, it's less than a half and the parkour C and D are not that hard, so maybe I can push a little bit. And I was like just pushing this limit, okay, I'll go into this city, and I started feeling very well. I was like, okay, I'll raid parkour C and D tonight. I was feeling so good. And then I had a problem with the pump, which kind of really threw me off because I punctured and I couldn't pump it because it was broken, the pump. So I tried to solve with a hotel and everything for many hours, and at some point I said, okay, I just give up. It was hard in the beginning, but now it's like I really feel like I did learn a lot, especially about how I deal with the pressure from others, the pressure from looking the leaderboard, everything around the race, right? And so I really feel eager to try it again, and I wish there was something soon enough to try again. Yeah.
And how does it feel to have been part of a Flinter event versus a kind of mixed event? Is that significant?
Yeah, it's totally different. Like the amount of support we get to each other on the road before the race, like even I was suggesting in the WhatsApp chat before the race that can we postpone the race a week after so we get a full week to kind of chat to each other, because it was so warm and so cool to be in this group before and during the race as well. They were struggling. It's something I never would have imagined in a race, that people are very competitive, especially cis men. And so this is really cool. Yeah.
Karen Winfield, CAP 85, spoke to us about coming to ultra-distance cycling and riding the 101 as a slightly older rider, and the importance of representation of age diversity at events like this.
I've been cycling for a good few years now, and there are many times when I've felt out of place, as I think everybody in this field probably has from terms of gender. For me, it's also with age as well, and I feel that I don't see many other riders that look like me that do this type of thing. And when the opportunity arose, I knew it was always going to be really difficult, but I also knew that it was something that I would really love to be part of. And if anybody that follows ultra racing can see that I'm willing to give it a go. And now, of course, because I didn't finish, I feel a little bit, didn't quite fulfill what my hopes were. But what I did was I did the best that I could at the time. And I also feel like I've learnt stuff, and I'm not going away from this saying never again. I'm saying, okay, what could be next?
Here's CAP 132. Rose Osborne, who had told us at the start line that their main goal was just to complete the race, having previously scratched a couple of ultras in the past. They finished an impressive 23rd in the GC at 125 hours.
You said before the race that you scratched the first two attempts.
Yes.
You did, because you had no fun.
Yep.
What changed?
Well, this time, I think I said it was, I decided that like this experience is not just fun, it's like all the hard stuff and the fun and all the experiences, and that I needed to bear that in mind, that like what I wanted to get out of it was all of those, not just fun. Changed. What changed for me? Okay. What changed was I decided like that basically my mindset was going to be I was going to get here no matter what, so even when I needed to stop, if I needed to stop for 2 hours then I would stop, but I had to keep going. I couldn't just be like done. I'm not sure.
Last time I saw you was at the top of a mountain, I don't remember which, and you said you gave me the list of all the steps that were going wrong, and the list was
quite long. Yeah,
can you make me another list today? I'm
very happy, very proud. The last day was really tough. I did the longest day out of all the days on the last day because I needed to make the finish. A number of times during the day I thought I wasn't going to make it, but I just kept going. It's crazy what your body will do if you can keep control of your mind. The body will just keep going.
CAP 29, Katie Moss from Bristol, is an experienced ultra rider, previously riding the TCR as a pair with her husband. She spoke to Athlyn about her 101 ride and finding freedom in riding an ultra solo.
Any other big, like, 101 learning moments for you?
I think one of the things I was worried about, because my husband and I have done a lot of riding as a pair, so I've never done all the admin myself, and so I was worried about being inefficient, about trying to do all that stuff on the go. But actually, I think all the sort of riding that we've done together, and I actually am much better at it than I realised, and it was really straightforward, and I'd had my list of hotels, I had it all plotted on my map, so I knew what I needed to put when, and all of that just worked so smoothly. So I think probably the effort I did put in, I was worried I hadn't put enough effort into the planning, but actually I think it all like really did pay off. Although I think there were just a couple of bits of my route, as I say, I definitely did more elevation, but I on the whole thought my route was pretty good, I think. But yeah, I think more that I can be, I like can do the stuff on the go, and yeah, I think I'm still slightly taken aback actually that I'm here. So we did TCR as a pair.
Oh right.
4 years ago. But this was a big thing for me, doing it on my own. So that's why I think all the bits about sort of real self-sufficiency rather than relying on one other person. But I think I do still love riding with you, of course. But actually there is just something really freeing, which you've experienced because you've done stuff on your own before, of like just being purely on your own terms, like when you want to stop, when you want to eat, when you want to get water, when you need to go to the loo. There's none of trying to second guess what the other person wants. And that actually was really freeing. Like, and I think that it's been such a like amazing feeling of just feeling so empowered to just do my own thing, even if at times it didn't go to plan.
We've heard a couple of times from CAP 45, Emily Bay Cheng, who's had a challenging and at times transcendental ride down to Cordoba. At the finish line, they were buzzy and told us about a role model back home who'd encouraged them to come and ride the 101, and also about potential plans for future ultras.
I'm surprised there weren't more Americans, which is a very American-centric view, I admit. I mean, it's funny because when I got here, all the Europeans kept on asking me, oh, you're American? How did you hear about this? As if it was a shock that I had heard about it. So that's an entirely different perspective. So there's this woman named Erica who ridden with in the bike community in San Francisco probably a decade ago when I first got into cycling. I can't even remember how we met, but at that time, she was doing randonneuring events and did her first ultra and did the TCR. But I remember her putting the TCR on the map for me. And I started watching content about the TCR. There were some short films that were made that are just so beautiful. So I give her credit to, in some ways, introducing me to this space. But we haven't been in touch for a while, probably for, you know, 8 years. And she reached out to me end of last year, and she said, hey, Emily, I saw that you just did this Japanese Odyssey ultra bikepacking event. I think this other event called Lost.101 would be right up your alley. Lost, who organizes the TCR, which I did, like this is their inaugural like Flinta race. you should sign up. So it was her encouragement, or else I would have never known about it. So I think that's really cool that it was like a TCR alum that told me about it.
I also think that's quite a nice example of like someone, not to put words in your mouth, but like someone being your role model, and the fact that that like encouragement here as well works both ways, whether it's like the people up at the front have been here every moment to welcome riders in, and everyone who comes in stays, and it feels like that reciprocal exchange that
is, thank you for putting those words in my mouth. I'm going to pretend that they actually came out of my mouth. Like, related to that, when I got to the finish in Cordoba, at some point Chris, who was, you know, freshly showered and everything from the night before, walked up, and Chris was telling me that having done the TCR, now that we've done Lost Dot, like, I should definitely, could definitely consider doing it. And it's not necessarily harder. In fact, in some ways, Lost Dot was harder because of the condensed amount of climbing through all the checkpoints. So that was actually really motivating for me to hear from someone who's done it.
We last heard from Cap 33, Tasha Kim, out on Parkour B, where she had told us about her mantras that were keeping her going when things got tough. Tasha arrived just past 7 p.m, straight into the finishers party, and before getting stuck in, spoke to Sophie.
Welcome to the party.
Thank you.
Last time I saw you was in Parkour B, I think.
Yeah. Wow, that was so hard.
That was hard?
Yeah, yeah.
But you made it.
Yeah, it was my goal. I thought I would finish faster, and then I realized I was going more slowly, so I thought, let me try really hard to get within the time. And then today, my goal is to pass as many people as possible, and I think I passed like maybe 8 people.
That helps you going.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a strategy.
So, yeah, it was a good race.
If you had to describe the whole experience, the 101 in one word, what would it be?
Hard. I was also thinking that this race should be called the Lost Dot 303. Like, it's not the 101. It's too hard.
I'll put fewer climbs in it next year.
Yes, please.
Okay. And then you'll come back.
Maybe.
Cap 30, Nelly Grootevent, had some practical learning to take away from the 101. Although, to be fair, I don't think we can fault any rider for hoping for better weather than we eventually got.
How does it feel to have that last temp?
Yeah, feels good. I don't know.
Did you learn something during the ride?
Yeah, I would not bring a tent again.
Duh.
Duh. But it was nice. I could probably be faster if I don't carry like an extra 3 kilo.
Did you use it at the end?
Once to the campground just to use it. I would not have used it at these conditions, to be honest. Yeah. I had a very good night's sleep at the campground.
Okay. Did you learn something about yourself?
Yeah, I was surprised that if you really want it, it's easy. I enjoyed it so much. Even the conditions were not mine. I hate the cold and I hate wet. So, and I had everything, snow, wind. But I enjoyed it all the time, so that's nice.
Perfect.
Yeah. So,
if you had to describe the 101 in one word, what would it be?
Stubborn. Or relentless.
Time for the recap of the day. Today in control car number 2, we covered the last 200 kilometers to Cordoba. And honestly, every single time we saw a rider still pushing on the pedal toward the finish, our heart like burst with joy. We spent the afternoon at the finish line, and let me tell you, of all the finish line I've been to, the only word that could describe this one is joy, like pure, simple joy, like there was no room for anything else. And then came the finisher party. But first, the fashion moment. Tonight on the catwalk, also known as the finisher party, we could clearly identify this season's biggest must-have. A pair of fake plastic Birkenstock bought from a random bazaar, an address that was shared between riders right on the finish line. Because after stopping riding, the only thing you really need is adjustable straps as the leg starts to swell. Tonight, the cutoff was at midnight, and instead of behaving like responsible adults and going to sleep, we all stayed on the dance floor waiting for the final rider within GC to arrive. At 11 p.m., Emma Young, cap 23, crossed the finish line to a standing ovation, and I believe "We Are the Champion" started playing at that exact moment. Tonight, 50 riders are officially within GC, and many more are still on their way to get their finish. Congratulations to everyone who dared to take the starts, but also, and maybe even more importantly, congratulations to everyone who danced, because after 1,200 kilometers dancing for hours to "It's Raining Men" absolutely counts as a serious athletic achievement. For 1 week, I've been surrounded by Flinters and by an atmosphere that I can only describe with one expression: safe place. Going back into the outside world after living inside this bubble of support, kindness and understanding is going to be really hard. During this race, I saw resilience, so much positivity in adversity, so much strength. And sometimes I wonder if part of that strength also comes from the world we had to grow up in, because many of us were not simply welcomed through the doors. Sometimes the door was closed, so we had to learn to climb through the windows instead. I heard many people say during the race, "I didn't know I was this strong." And maybe that sentence says a lot about the way society teaches many of us to doubt ourselves from the very beginning, a lack of confidence that is still imposed sometimes violently in many parts of the world. In Afghanistan, women are forbidden from riding bikes. They are also forbidden from studying, from speaking freely. In many countries, being a trans person is still dangerous, and homosexuality remains illegal in dozens of places around the world. So how do we change that? By creating role models, by giving people the opportunity to recognize themselves in someone else, the opportunity to think, if she, they, he can do it, maybe I can too. And yes, at the end of the day, we only rode bikes. We did not change the face of the world. But for once, the spotlight was on us. We were visible, and all of the Flinter out there could see you, whether you finished or not, whether you were first or last. We have just added 144 more names to the list of people others can look up to. So go home and spread the word. We're riding the world. What a show you've given us. What a race. Our ride of this year, Lost.101, ends today. Thank you for trusting us with your stories on the side of the roads. I hope we did them justice. It was a teamwork. I would also like to finish with one of Lydia Trott's cap 123 mantras. You've earned your dot, you belong. And I will add, within GC or not. Keep the lights on, the lanterne rouge is still lighting up the night. So stand tall, be proud, because you've now part of the Lost Dot family.
Fast forward a couple of days, and Caroline Klein, cap 59, arrives into Cordoba. Our Lanterne Rouge, the last rider to complete the 101. Sophie Potter spoke to Caroline, a French speaker, and translated for us.
We do not close the doors until the very last rider has made it safely back to the stable. And today, Caroline Klein, cap 59, arrived in Cordoba. She was both the final rider still out there on the road and the final rider to complete the entire course and finally earn a finish. She was our Lanterne Rouge. The expression originally comes from trains. The last wagon used to carry a red lantern at the back so people could see the train had fully passed. And honestly, I think there is something beautiful about that image, because the Lanterne Rouge is not the rider left behind. It is the rider who kept the lights on until the very end. So we asked Caroline what it's like to be the Lanterne Rouge. And she texted us, "Sorry, I needed to take a nap and eat." And 2 hours later, "Well, I didn't really know. I just tried to reach the checkpoints, and once I was out of GC at CP2, I decided to slow down to arrive and enjoy myself without being exhausted. And then I also lost my tracker, which made me lose almost a whole day looking for it." We also asked her what was her best moment. Impossible to say. We are always tossed about by emotions, but certainly some descent when we felt like we were flying over the mountain. We also asked her if she had some doubts, and she said yes when she missed the CP2 cutoff, and she didn't know whether she would continue or not, but she didn't know she was the Lanterne Rouge because she just didn't really check the trackers. And after that, she sent me a beautiful picture of her holding a bretzel
in front of the finish line because, yes, Caroline is from Alsace. So well done, Caroline. Well done to all the riders out there, to all the Dutch watchers out there. You can turn off the lights. The Lost Dot 101 is finally over.
Thanks for joining us on the Lost Dot 101 podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the journey. The Lost Dot 101 podcast was produced, hosted, and edited by Nick Rawlings. Music and immersive sound production also by Nick Rawlings. Our race reporters delivered interviews and spatial field recordings from the road. They were Sophie Posser and Aflin Cathcart-Keys. Additional contributions by race directors Hannah Labalestier and Andrew Phillips. The media manager was Taylor Doyle and media assistant was Alexander Wood, with thanks to the studio in Bath for the lease of their ambisonic field recorders. The Lost Dot 101 podcast is supported by our race partners, Albion and Ride with GPS.